there are smaller things too, like the confidence of touching animals. Like we went to a farm and there were snakes and parrots and stuff like that. So when I was, I hate all these reptiles, but I knew I needed to set an example.
Example, what was that?
It was a snake, a huge snake. Oh, yeah. No, I think it was in Australia or something. Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Alhamdulillah, welcome back, dear listeners, to another episode on the Mizi Wahid podcast. Today, we are recording our 8th and final episode in this series in partnership with Yayasan Mendaki. I hope you've enjoyed the last 7 episodes. And today, in my concluding podcast episode, we'll be talking about how to motivate your children and how to build their self-esteem. And we're going to look at strategies and approaches that are specific and suitable for boys and girls. And for my last episode, my guest will be none other than the founder of Hayat Network, Ustaza Liana Musfira. How are you, Ustaza?
I'm good, Ustaz. How are you?
I'm good.
This is the last episode.
Yes, welcome back.
Alhamdulillah, congratulations.
Thank you for coming again.
Thank you for having me.
So, before we proceed, this, as I mentioned, is a partnership with Yayasan Mendaki. This is the second year we're doing a series with them, and we're glad to have had your support all this while. They are a pioneer in the self-help group for the development of the Malay Muslim community in Singapore. They assist students and individuals of the Malay Muslim community with education and lifelong learning. If you wish to know more, you can visit my.mendaki.org.sg. All right. So, like I said, Ustaza, this is a momentous day for us, 8 out of 8 episodes. Mm. And it's truly an honor to have had other guests as well, apart from you, like Fiza O, who is your friend, Mr. Shafiq, and Dr. Nur Atika, right? Mm. They have covered various topics and shared their insights, their perspectives and knowledge and tips for all of us. Alhamdulillah. So, in some of the previous episodes, we discussed things like being a parent in our child's life and delayed gratification, which are very interesting discussions. And today, I would like to speak to you, Saza, about how to build and raise your child's self-esteem. First of all, my first question is actually, when you were growing up, how would you describe your self-esteem? Was it high, low, moderate?
I think I was very
too
I would say I was a very confident child.
Where do you get the confidence from?
I think my parents' trust and my parents, I don't know if the word that I can use is celebrating. They were celebrating little efforts. Mm. Even the part where I became a prefect, for example, or the part where I got the last position in a running tournament, like they would last. I realize I'm not
no
a runner.
So how did your parents celebrate you?
Like they were like, okay, you did your best. It's okay, Kaka. You did your best. I'm proud of you. And we work very closely with. I don't know if that even the word that we are using, the reward system. Mm-hmm. Like even if I failed miserably, but because I have put in the effort, they would give me something.
So they celebrated the efforts that you put in.
Exactly.
More than just the outcome.
More than just the outcome. Although the outcome is the priority. Mm-hmm. So for example, if I don't get top in class, I would cry. And I wouldn't like eat dinner. Like that merajuk mode is on.
But that one seems like you punishing yourself.
Yeah, no, not more of them. Mm-hmm. Not more of them. They'd be like, okay, it's okay. You can try again. Yeah, so I think I got super high confidence because my parents were celebrating every part about me. Yeah.
But throughout life and into adulthood now, do you notice your self-esteem going up and down?
I think most of the time it's down.
So it was very high last time, now it's down.
Yeah.
But what do you think dictates our self-esteem and self-confidence?
External influences definitely trigger, but I think if we do not know how to process those external influences, you can really enter this, I call it the realm of spiraling. Like, I literally call it the rabbit hole. When you're not feeling good, and then if you don't have anyone to make you feel better, you can immediately see yourself falling deeper and deeper. I learned, the process that I...
I learned a new term recently from Ms. Maimuna of her work, spiraling of misery.
Yes, yes.
Spiraling of misery, yeah.
Because you can see it slowly going down and down, and then you want to get yourself out of it, but you don't know how. I like, what is it called again? Spiraling of misery.
Not misery, but misery.
No, misery.
So, you mentioned rightly, in today's context, it's harder. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about also, and young kids are already influenced by this, is actually social media. So, the rising number of young people falling into depression and having, you know, anxiety issues is partly because they compare their life with other people's lives, other people's achievements against theirs, and they feel horrible about themselves. They feel like, oh, I'm never going to be good enough. I'm never going to reach those heights. I'm never going to match up to my former classmate or my former colleague who's doing so well now or so much happier now. So do you believe that social media sometimes can have that kind of an effect on you?
Definitely. Social media can mean a lot of different things for each one of us. A simple, innocent post, like your friend just purchased something new, it can be a form of attack because you don't have it. So I think the way we perceive, the way we absorb, the way we, you know, we interpret what we see online can really either break us or make us.
True.
And I think for me as a parent, I would limit the screen time. Like for now, they have screens, they have phones, they have gadgets, but I do not introduce to them social media like Facebook or Instagram because I don't think I'm ready for that time where they're going to be asking questions. As of now, we're already battling with so much in the real world, what more social media. So I think one of the key factors that I put into consideration is to not give them the usage of social media at the moment. I'm not ready for that. Yeah.
One of the moments that really struck me many years ago was when my first daughter Hannah, right? I think she was five. She was watching some YouTube videos which looked harmless because it was Disney princesses. Sorry, it was normal people putting on makeup to look like Disney princesses. And she was watching some Disney cartoons. She liked it. And then it was just this cool videos, they transform and then they look like Disney princess. So to her, those were like pretty. So one day, she told me, was inside the car, and she told me, Dada, I don't like my face.
Oh no.
Yeah, I don't like my face. I want to change my face or something along those lines. And I had to interject immediately because I think for whatever reason, I believe she's beautiful, but she was suddenly affected when she looked at other people on YouTube, you know, showcasing this look is the best look. Like, this is the perfect look. This looks like a princess. And she thinks she's not good enough. And I had to immediately come in and say, no, Hannah, you are beautiful just as you are. You know, you don't need all of this. These are like thick makeup, okay? It's like seven or 10 layers of makeup to look like a princess. And, you know, and I use a tactic which kind of worked now because she didn't like clowns. So clowns also use lots of makeup and they look scary, right?
That's a perfect comparison.
And then she like, yeah, I don't like clowns. And then, okay, so you don't need that, okay? You are just beautiful just as you are. And she's like, okay. So I think we have to be careful. You're right. Children today, I mean, as adults, we are already affected. What more children? Correct. They don't have anything else to compare it with. They don't have the grounding yet. They don't know how to center themselves properly to what actually matters, the real values. So, yeah, I think we definitely have to monitor that.
Like, we as adults, we don't know how to filter some of the information that we get online. So, what more children? Yeah, that art of filtering or art of categorizing what information is useful and what information is not useful, that is something that I think the kids are not ready yet. Yeah, so I would wait as long as I can before I introduce the children to social media. But then as you were sharing about Hannah, I remember when Afra, we went to Toys R Us And Afra was looking at some of the dolls and the Barbie that were on the shelf. And then she asked how come none of the Barbies have similar skin tone to hers.
Mm.
And my daughter is slightly towards a more tanned complexion. So she was asking how come there's no Barbie or no dolls that have similar skin tone as hers. Because she would want to buy or purchase something
mm-hmm.
that looks somewhat similar to her.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a simple, it's not social media. It's not comparing anything, but little, like, that's a context that I thought it was innocent, but she came out with an entirely different reaction to it.
Yeah, I think this is a big issue in the US. I think Barbie, for example, eventually came up with different skin tones, you know, for their dolls because of this. Because there were too many complaints, you know. So like, oh, you only look pretty if you are a certain
skin color. Yeah, if you look like Barbie, that's it, yeah.
Okay, just like the example I gave with Hannah, have you ever been able to notice when any of your kids showed a lack of self-esteem in themselves? It doesn't just mean about their image and looks, but maybe performance, like they feel like, oh man, I'm not good enough.
Mm.
Have you ever noticed?
Yes. My youngest son, I sent him to one of the enrichment classes and they were supposed to make a book cover. So they can write about anything, like a story about robots, a story about a superhero, anything. So he was not able to write. And the rest of his peers in class basically finished half of the front page.
Mm.
And it was a mother-child activity.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there, I saw him completely, his eyes locked at the rest of his friend's cover page. Because I think he was able to draw, but he was not able to write the title. He was not able to write the description.
Mm.
So I really appreciated how the teacher actually noticed. I noticed, but at that point in time, I was like, oh no, what do I do? Because I can see his disappointment.
Mm.
And I started going down, what is it called? That spiraling misery. I'm like, oh no, have I failed as a parent? Like immediately I went that spectrum. But then the teacher was like, it's okay, Afif, you're better with drawing. Look at your drawing compared to some of your friends. And some of your friends are stronger with words. Some of them are stronger with spelling, but not good with content.
Mm-hmm.
And for you, your words are better.
Mm-hmm.
So after we went out, we actually processed it together.
Mm-hmm.
Went out from the class, we processed it together. And it made him want to start reading. So I know that's not an ideal situation to have your child to be put through, but it sparked a certain button in him that okay, mama, I want to be able to spell robot now. like I said, it's not an ideal situation, but I think it's about how you walk through with your child when such incidents happen.
Thank you for sharing that. But I think the key here is also as parents that we need to be observant. So when your child shows in their facial expression, their body language, their lack of interest in something, it could be a sign that they are lacking self-belief.
Correct.
I don't think I'm good enough. I don't think I can do what my friends can do. I think in my youngest also, because she also is taking a longer time to read, to learn how to read. So sometimes she just doesn't want to sit with the siblings when they're all reading books because she feels like, I don't know how to read. Correct. So I think as parents, when you notice that, you need to do something about it. Okay, sometimes we would sit beside her and read with her. Sometimes we would say to the abang and kakak, can you read together with her?
Mm.
So she feels like she belongs. Sometimes that's all a kid needs. They need to know that people are there to support them, even though they don't feel well-equipped or they don't feel like they are good enough.
Mm.
Yeah. You have boys and you have a girl. Do you think there is a slight difference in terms of how to build their self-esteem, or do you think they're about the same?
I think they're different in their own way. So my first boy compared to my second boy,
two boys are different?
Yes, correct. So I think it's not about boys versus girls. It's really about child versus child.
Mm-hmm.
So like for my eldest, he's very, very quiet. And people, some would say it's difficult to communicate with Adam because he's very quiet. But then when you talk with him about a topic that he's engrossed with, like Lego or robotics or coding. He can go on and on and on. So I realized that, okay, this is work, this is a fit with my child. This is not a fit with my second child. This is a perfect fit with my last child. That adjustment is something that I'm still learning and relearning till today. Because like my daughter 3 years ago, what makes her happy is different now. So I think that is the adapt thing that we constantly need to do as parents.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the stuff that my son Hussein used to love back then, he doesn't love anymore. And now it's changing even more rapidly. Like every year, he changes his liking towards something. Like for the first 4 years of his life, it was always dinosaurs. Easy.
I remember.
Dinosaur is fine.
Safinata.
Then
yeah,
suddenly,
yeah.
You know, he started liking Sonic the Hedgehog. Non-stop Sonic. And then suddenly now he likes Super Mario and then non-stop Super Mario. And then now he's into Pokemon and everything. It's like, wow, we have to keep up. But when we talk about why is it important for us to know what they like? Because it's part of this, developing your self-esteem. In letting them know that, okay, certain things is okay for you to like and we will support you, but there are things that maybe it's not really good for your development, and we spend a little lesser time attending to those areas now. Okay.
Trust is important, Ustaz. My son, elder son is primary three, so he has to prepare for his weighted assessment now. So we are constantly practicing maths questions.
Because they've never sat for any exam, right?
So this is it. This is the actual deal. So I have my own way of solving a problem and he has his own way of solving a problem. And then when I realized I was showing him my way of solving the problem, I noticed his facial expression changed. And I was panicking because I just wanted him to get it right. Basically, as a mom, like, okay, I want you to get it right. I want you to do the best you can. And my strategy worked for me. But then I started noticing he actually teared. I was like, what is this? This has nothing to do with ST. I didn't say anything. We were just comparing the way we solved that problem. But then he started tearing because he said, and this coming from a 9-year-old, it really affected me. He said, Mom, I just want you to trust me. So he actually communicated that he's not denying the way of me solving the problem, but he just wanted me to trust that his way works too. So I think that's a big realization for me, because Adam actually communicated that he just wanted me to trust. But there are other child that would never be able to communicate or articulate anything. So as parents, like, you gotta be constantly in that conscious or aware mode. Like any facial, if I didn't zoom at his face, if I went on, finished my problem solving, I would have missed that second of him tearing.
True.
Yeah, so that was, it's just maths, but it means more than that. Like, Mama, I just want you to trust me. So at the end of the day, yes, the way I solved the problem was much shorter and much quicker, but he's more comfortable with his way. So I gotta trust him. This is his maths problem. This is him.
That's what the teacher taught, probably.
Yeah, and that's what works for him. So it's not about enforcing what works for me on the child. Yeah, so I still remember that. If I can picture, if I can frame that look of disappointment. Yeah. It's like, Mama, I'm disappointed. You should have trusted me. Ah, that would have stayed in me forever.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for sharing. That's really powerful. But I think that lesson is not just in that problem sum. That lesson is in life. Your child wants you to trust them to handle your own situation sometimes. I think we as adults still feel that way. We have parents sometimes that want us to do things their way, but we just want to tell them, let me handle this. I got this, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so, Saza, there are some examples here that I want to highlight to you and share with our listeners as well in terms of how we can help our children to develop their own self-confidence. Number one is to actually be the role model, to model confidence in yourself. So, I think we underestimate the fact that our children look up to us a lot and they mimic our behavior, but also they absorb our confidence. So if they see that you as a parent are very confident in yourself, then they will absorb it and become as confident.
Mm.
So, for example, there was one last year, was it? Yeah, I think last year I went to KL in November for an event. And I brought Hannah, who's already 11 by then, for my business trip. And she was there for all of my talks. Mm. I did a talk. I had my own event. I had a talk for Petronas. And she was just there observing. And I know deep down somewhere she wants to be a speaker in the future.
Mm,
mm. Okay. I didn't want her to. She just somehow blurted it out one day. But of course, she's lacking confidence now at 11, 12, and self-esteem issues. But to show that I can do this and this is how I do it, I hope she is inspired by it, number one.
Inshallah.
But there are smaller things too. Like the confidence of touching animals. Like we went to a farm and there were snakes and parrots and stuff like that. So when I was, I hate all these reptiles, but I knew I needed to set an example.
Example, what was that?
It was a snake, a huge snake.
Oh,
yeah.
No,
I think it was
no.
in Australia or something. Then we carried it. And then my son, Hussein, he's curious. So he wanted to, he touched it and he was very confident. So recently in KL, a similar experience, he went on his own. He didn't need anyone else. He was just confident on his own to just carry the big snake on his own, you know. So I think children, they always look at the parents, you know, whether it's you cooking a meal and being confident that you can do it, or you planning an event or an outing or a trip and being confident about your plans. Those things, mean a great deal for your child. So do not underestimate. That's number one. I'll let you cover number two, which is don't get upset about mistakes. I think children, when they see you getting super upset about a mistake that you did, oh, I shouldn't have done this, and you say it out loud, and the child is there, and you show how frustrated you are with yourself, and then you have your own pity party, and like, the child picks that up too. So, you know, any thoughts on how we can manage this, not being too hard on ourselves, especially in front of our kids?
I'm very big about not embarrassing the children in front of others. So, for example, if they did something wrong, I need to address that, but I cannot do it in front of the rest of the siblings or anyone because it might put them in a spotlight that they might be uncomfortable in. So I know it's difficult because sometimes when we are really sad, we will cry in front of the children then. But what's important is that you actually go through the whole process with them. Like when I cry, for example, okay, then they will say, "Mama, why are you crying? Why are you sad?" So that part, as a conscious adult, you gotta select what is the appropriate language to share with your children. So I cannot say that, oh, because this person do this person do that, because I want to show that good example for my child. So it's not wrong to share how hurt you are with your child, but you got to give them more than that because they want to know what's hurting you, what's causing the tears, right? So I realize, oh, because I'm hurt, because I'm just feeling a little sad, but trust me, I'll feel better. Can I just get a hug? And that learning and relearning is something I'm doing till today. Like Afra, Mama said, why Mama, what's going on? Did anybody hurt you? No, I'm just feeling a little sad. So can you hug me for a little bit? Can you hold my hand? So they automatically, you know, they understand that you need to be sad, but then you didn't push that extra button to like spark other things, you know? That's scary though, because when we are emotional and we don't take care of our reaction and our responses when we're emotional, the children will literally absorb anything and everything.
That's true.
Yeah, so that is...
I guess kids, the issue is, I mean, based on the first example, modeling confidence in yourself, second example, you get upset about minor mistakes. Both of these prove that kids at that age, they don't know how to differentiate between what should I pick up from my parents and what I shouldn't.
Correct, because they absorb everything.
And that's why, much like you said earlier, which is you have to explain and talk to them.
Yeah.
So then, oh, it's because of this.
And that's the tiring part.
It's very tiring.
You gotta,
but it's necessary.
It is necessary. You got to be prepared to walk through the entire process with your child. So if you're sad, and you gotta be patient. Like, they would want to know, but why? So that part where you have to consciously, okay, what do I have to answer? Do I battle between sharing my emotions, or do I battle between wanting to be the responsible adult?
Mm.
Yeah, so that learning and relearning is something all parents are dealing with every day.
Mm. That's good. Number three is to encourage them to try new things.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is probably a culture that we need to set at home. Like, we are very open to trying new things. That's it. Just set it one day with the family. Hey,
mm.
I think you should try this. Mm. And naturally, I think kids, when they hit a certain age, like 10, I think my 10-year-old Hakim, he hesitates trying new things because he doesn't think he is good enough or he can do it. Why? Because it's unfamiliar.
Mm.
So, but if it was a younger age, they will most likely say, okay, I'll try, because they don't know the embarrassment of failing at something or not doing well at something. They just go. But the moment they notice, hey, if I don't do well in this, my siblings are going to laugh at me, or, you know, my parents are going to think I'm lousy or things like that. So if we start young, encouraging them to try new things and also allowing them to fail, that again is another confidence booster, right?
Yeah.
So I guess for our listeners, you know, parents, why don't you start to create this culture at home? Example, what's something simple that we can get our kids to try at home?
For me right now is chili, because they are so used to eating.
Oh, trying so to eat chili. To eat.
They're so used to eating like soup or macaroni or pasta that is not spicy. So I say, you know what? Instead of tomato sauce, try chili sauce.
Mm.
So I know this is, it's little, but it really gives them that, okay, I'm going to try more. So now they are actually not even asking chili sauce. They're actually saying, Mama, I want chili sauce with garlic. Mama, I want Thai chili sauce. So I think you were right about giving them the opportunity to try new things, but as parents, you also got to be prepared that you got to do it first. So in front of them, I'm going to take a little bit, Mama's going to try a little bit. So I don't like garlic chili, for example, but because they want to try it, I got to be the brave one and tell them, you know what, Mama's going to try it first. Yeah. So, and another thing, Ustaz, I think it's important to remember that each child has their own pace. P-A-C-E, has their own pace in doing everything. You know, some child, like, so fast they can hold or touch a snake. Some of them, like, it takes you 5 zoo trip and then the 6th one, then they will try.
Yes. I mean, different kids, different.
Exactly.
Yeah. So my other son, Hakim, he's the bigger one. Kalau ada lalat pun, he run away. He doesn't like even tiny insects. He's big, you know. So it's funny. So different kids have different...
Exactly.
The pace, like, I think for my sons also, what we train them is to do the iqamah, like before salat. Right? So we train. Of course, they didn't go madrasah. So to train them until level accordance. Then, okay, now atuk and nenek is here. Can you qamat with them here? At first, malu-malu, you know, shy. But then eventually they did it. And then eventually when we went to other people's homes and then maghrib time, see, I pushed them, go and try. Almost want to cry, but they want to try. And then they tried, and then they did a good job. So we have to allow them to try things that they're not necessarily used to or comfortable. But again, this builds their confidence overall. Okay, I guess one last thing, Ustaza, is helping our kids to set goals. Also, is a form of shaping and molding their self-esteem. Why? Because I think when you give them the autonomy to decide what do you want to achieve this year, or what kind of marks do you want to hit this year for your studies. Last year, you got 70 for English. Do you want to aim for 75? Last year, you got 75 for Malay. You want to aim for 85? Like, you give examples and then tell them, okay, you set those goals. Then they get to decide on these things. It makes them feel like they are somewhat in control. And this also makes them feel good about themselves. I mean, this is just one example. Are there examples of setting goals that you do with your kids?
I'm introducing to my children journal writing. So some of them call it journal, some of them call it diary. So they choose their own notebook, they choose their own pen or stationery they want to do it. So they put inside what they want for themselves. Mm-hmm. And some of the pages, they wouldn't share it with me. Like, Mama, it's a secret for me. Mm-hmm. But some of the pages, they would say, okay, Mama, you need to remind me that this is what I want, for example. So I think I agree with your sharing earlier about how we got to let the kids decide on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes we think that we want to decide and make that authoritative decision for them almost for everything.
Mm.
But when you take a step back, just a step back, not many, many steps back, just take a step back and actually allow the children to make decisions on their own. Most of the time I'm amazed. Like, oh my God, you did it. Like, similarly to the situation about the work, right? I saw that, hey, this is not working, Adam. Are you sure this is the right way to do?
Mm.
Let Mama teach you the correct one.
Mm.
But I took that step back. And it's difficult because I have that parent ego. Like, no, I just want you to be on the right track.
Mm.
So it takes a lot for us to take a step back. Just trust the process. And they did it. Like, they will prove to you time and time again that they will eventually reach their own goals. Yeah. And when they don't, you got to be prepared to embrace that. Okay, what's next? Are you going to make another goal? Are you going to stick to that goal till you get it? So I think this entire episode is really talking about whether parents have the patience to walk through literally anything and everything with the child.
Mm. All right. The final point, Zaza, before we end, is actually about the first point you raised about what your parents did, which is to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
So celebrate the efforts of our children. Praising them for the accomplishments is another great thing. Not overpraising, but just enough.
Mm.
It's important to let them know that you are proud of them and proud of their efforts, regardless of the outcome. Sometimes they might suddenly think that the outcomes matter more. Why? Even though you never told them that it's important, because in school, they are being compared or they compare with their friends. Right? I noticed my daughter doing this.
Mm.
She would, the moment they get the report books, she would start looking with her friends. Okay, who got more? Who got the highest mark for this subject? She would naturally do that. We didn't tell her to do that. We didn't teach that. We didn't encourage that, but they do it. So at home, we must remind them that what we are most proud of is that you studied, you revised, you practiced, you didn't miss your tuition classes for no reason. You know, things like that would make them feel like, okay, I'm doing all right, right?
Mm.
So let your kids know that you value the work that they're doing, whether they are still, you know, 3 or 4 years old, all the way to the point where maybe they're teenagers by now or bordering on teenagehood, and let them explore and try and fail and then celebrate their efforts altogether. Right, Zaza? Any last words on this about celebrating?
We, as parents, we are trying our best to celebrate and embrace the little efforts and accomplishments that they manage to do on their own. But I think something that I'm trying to do on my own as well is to allow the kids to also celebrate their friends or their siblings' little achievement. So it's like a ripple effect. Like, I do it to them, they do it to their siblings do it to others.
Mm-hmm.
So I realize that if I would purposely sometimes, you know, purposely fail to see the reaction of my child. Mm-hmm. So for example, purposely, you know, take something and then accidentally slip and fall, and then it would make an entire mess on my new carpet, for example. Just to see the reaction of the children, what would they do? Literally, I just wanted to test. Is that even the word to test? What kind of reaction or responses a kid would do? So to see them, it's okay, Mama. It's okay. It's all right, Mama. We will help you cook a new set of Maggie Mee, for example.
Mm.
So to see that your approach actually have significant effect on them, and to see that in action is something that's heartwarming to know. So allow your children to be the one that celebrate other children's and their friends' little successes as well.
Mm.
Yeah, so that is something that,
you know, nice, but I would not drop my
feet. No, I mean, that is an example.
I'm too lazy to. Okay, thank you so much, Zaza, for all your sharing in these last few episodes. I hope all of you have benefited from listening to this. I would like to take this opportunity once again to thank Yayasan Mendaki for sponsoring all our episodes, and my heartfelt gratitude to all our listeners who have supported us by joining every week for the past months and also for sharing the content on social media. Thank you for all your kind support, and please, please, please continue to show your love towards us. One last message I want to share is regarding Class Matematica, or KMM. KMM is a parent and child program targeted at parents with preschool children aged 4 to 6 years old The workshops and activities conducted throughout the lessons aim to empower parents with mediated learning experience, MLE skills, so that they are more confident to teach their children in learning the basic numeracy concepts. Parents are guided by qualified facilitators or applying the appropriate MLE techniques in their child's learning. KMM aims to strengthen children's basic numeracy skills to prepare them for entry into primary school and nurture confidence, creativity, and social skills through craft and interactive activities. Thank you once again. Till then, take care, stay awesome. Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Bye-bye.